Hello everybody, I'm Jackie Fleeter. Today I was going to talk to you about my adventures in landscaping and gardening. Last year I built a house, a Vastu house, which is a type of sacred architecture, and I had a few talks on that for some of you that remember that. And that was a major accomplishment. And you know, building this Vastu house on this grid, it's a sacred grid. It's the grid that everything in the universe is built upon. And it's called the Vastu Purusha Mandala. And this particular grid is aligned with north, south, east, and west, like I've talked about. And this, when you build like this, what happens is you precipitate God consciousness into form, and this is the precipitation process. These houses represent, and building structures represent the precipitation process, and they precipitate subtle and gross energy into the matter plane. And so they benefit you and your community. And so this was a great thing that I did, and I'm really enjoying the property. I had an inspector come for a ham radio tower my husband was putting in, and he had to inspect the foundation, and the first thing he said is, "It's so peaceful here," you know, which is one of the signatures of the Vastu site, the building site, is that it's peaceful and harmonious. And he didn't know anything about it, so he just, that was his observation. So I built this house, and now I had to landscape around it, and that's my current project. And to build this house, when the excavation crew came for building the building foundation, they also had to take down an old pond that was here and some berms. And so they ended up blading off, and then they had to do some work because we are in a minor floodplain and we do have to deal with FEMA. They had to blade off nearly 3 acres of land. And so it was flat and dirt. We had to deal with, until the rains came, we had to deal with a lot of dust in the houses and stuff. But we finally got a little rain and a little grass growing around, but still there's a lot of work to be done with this acreage that's bladed off. And so one of the things I quickly discovered was that I have a hill behind my house, a natural hillside, which fortunately still has all of its vegetation on it, but it does direct the water towards my house. And then I have a fence around my house, and that block fence, which helps protect the energy of the house and the integrity of the house, but it also is pretty solid and tends to be like a bathtub when you get rain. So you get a lot of water. So I've got water coming off the hillside, and I've got water going around my fence. And then I've got a lot of water in the fence. And so how to deal with that, how to use it, how to direct it to my plants that I like, how to keep it from going under the foundation and undermining the foundation is another issue. And so those were things that I've been contemplating while I've been building the house, and how am I going to deal with these things. And then I'm getting, you know, erosion because of the bare ground. So I was building a number of little structures wherever I saw erosion, little rock structures to keep the erosion down. So, you know, in my plan for my yard, I desired to have a lot of edible things, and I desired to have some native plants and add some more trees, because we cut down some trees, so we wanted to add some more trees. And I desired vegetables and fruit. I also desired flowers and grains. You know, from Anastasia, we learned that having sunflowers on your plot's good. Having grains, growing them in addition to growing other fruits and vegetables is good. So I desired to have all these things and how to put it together. And the other thing that's interesting is because of the house, there's this energy grid that comes out from the house and extends out into the surrounding area in the neighborhood. So how do you take advantage of that? There's some stuff in the knowledge, the teachings on where to plant plants and how to use the energy grid, but it's very thin. And so how do I use this subtle energy and gross energies that's coming out of the house also to support my plant life? You know, what we traditionally hear is from the Vastu people is, well, you've got to put it on a grid and you make a grid and you put the plant in the center of the grid and stuff like that. But when the permaculture people say, well, nothing in nature is straight lines. So how do you plant, taking advantage of the energy and taking advantage of the natural landscape and the energy flow and the water flows? So these are things I've been contemplating. And I've also been studying nature farming, which is just farming like nature, basically. And I've been studying permaculture, which is permanent culture, which you've heard a lot about, and organic farming. I've been studying water harvesting, and I've been studying other methods. There's other things like cosmoculture, building towers, building pyramids, and how do they affect the land? It's pyramids very similar to Vastu architecture and the energy it produces and the things and how it affects the land. And so I've been studying all these things. So then you have to deal with your particular climate. And everybody's probably got subtle things about our climate. And the one thing about Arizona is people think, well, you've got mild climate and grow all year round. Well, we actually have six seasons of the year, and we like to joke that it's nice weather in getting pretty hot, inferno during the summer, and then pretty hot and then nice weather again. and so you have to deal, but then there's the monsoon season, you have to deal with that, and then there's the time that the bugs come that take over everything because they're so big and large and so many of the bugs. Different kinds of bugs. People are amazed at how big the bugs get down here. And so there's all these things you have to deal with. And like I was joking with another friend that, you know, in the wintertime, I thought, well, I'll grow some stuff. Well, we have 65 degrees maybe during the day and 24 at night. And so it's almost like you have winter and summer in one day. And so dealing with that, finding the plants that are going to be able to handle that, is interesting. So there's so many things to note, that it kind of swims all around in your head. And, what should you do? And so I talked to numerous friends, and I do have a lot of friends down here who are doing a lot of work in a lot of different areas trying to help the planet. One of them is an organic produce, he owns an organic produce distribution business and, called, it used to be New Harvest Organics. Now it's called Patagonian Orchards. And sometimes you can see their label, but they really try to help the farmers have a good business model for the farmers so that they can be profitable and aren't dependent on, loans and banks and seed companies. And, anyways, he wanted me to use some of the land that I have and some of the land adjacent to it to build a hothouse farm and a greenhouses for tomatoes. And what he was suggesting is I get a big loan and you do this, and we had bring natural gas across, we have this little creek area through the creek and up here and heat these hothouses and have several of them. And I thought about that and did cost analysis, and I thought, no, that's not going where I want to go, because it's so energy intensive still. And there were other ideas about how you might use potassium seeds and stuff like, or hulls, pistachio hulls and other nut hulls that produced, because we have so many nut farms, and you could burn those instead of gas, you know, natural gas. But, you know, it's like, it's still a lot of work. I'm not sure I want to do that. But his wife was saying, well, you could grow pumpkins and melons during the summer, you know, and you could do that and put in a big irrigation system. And again, I have a neighbor who said, well, you know, he's into conservation behind me, and he thought we should plant all native plants and restore the land with native grasses and pull up all the weeds, which to me is like, well, that seems like a lot of work. I don't know if I want to do that. I don't know if I'm that invested in having to have the native plants. Yes, some of the native plants, but also the landscape is always changing. And anyway, so there's a big movement for conservation, but I don't know if I want to go and try to restore all the land with native plants. And so that was another idea. So then we also have another group here called Native Seed Search who does local seed harvesting of native plants and the plants that were grown by the missionaries that were here and the Native Americans that were here. And, you know, there's just hundreds of grains, varieties of corn, hundreds of varieties of wheat and melons and things that were grown and other kinds of fruit trees grown in this area and still grow in some areas where they have water by themselves and you can harvest them. And so they promote that and they have a big, huge seed bank, and they're actually becoming more nationalized, and they travel around and they give seed saving classes and they get a lot of grants. Anyways, they have a farm right here, and they had a program where they were teaching people about farming and what they do, and I went to that, some of the local farms. But they said they would give me seeds. They would give me some wheat seeds and grain seeds, and I could grow those on the land, and if I would just give back half the crop, and then they would be getting more seeds, be partnering with me, getting more seeds, and they would be reestablishing some of these varieties and creating a market for them. So that's what they wanted to do, and I'm thinking a lot about that, doing some of that as I get a little more experience. And then, you know, I was reading in Elliot Coleman, is one person I've read a lot, and he's in Maine, I believe, and he grows greens all winter long under row covers with no heating in greenhouses and row covers in Maine in quite cold weather. So that's an interesting idea, and I've been experimenting a little bit with that. I should be able to grow it here, you know, grow stuff all winter long under row covers because I have a much milder winter. So there's that approach you could take. You know, there's also how much diversity should you have on the land, or should you be more focused on one crop. You know, another friend who is an organic farmer said, you could grow garlic and onions that grow really well down here in a nice cash crop. You could put mostly garlic and onions on your land and concentrate on that. So what do you do? You know, and sepulture, permaculture expert likes diversity. And another friend came who has a website called Gardening for Peace. And he's been a farmer for 40 years, and he's into the nature movement, nature farming movement, and a lot of different, also working with a lot of techniques that the Native Americans use. And he was talking about the importance of diversity and the importance of having stuff on the edges, that starting your, that's where the diversity is, starting your work on the edges. So wherever you have an edge, like you're the fence, you have a forest edge that comes up to your house. You have, maybe a transition from your yard to a neighbor's yard where there's trees or bushes growing. It's kind of an edge, and that's where a lot of the biodiversity happens. And so that's where you start your permaculture, your farming. So he was talking about that, and I started to look around at where all my edges were, catching the rain there and then planting the water. First you're supposed to plant the water, then the plant. So you can make water harvesting, little berms if you have a hillside or you have a sidewalk or a pavement, a hardscape, that's what they call it, a pavement or an asphalt. Where water runs off, then you can make a little water harvesting structure right next to it, and then you can plant plants, and they can benefit from that water, and it's self-sustaining. You don't have to go out and water it, maybe every once in a while, depending on what plants you have, but if you've got a little water harvesting structure, that may supply enough water, and you really have very low maintenance, so there's a lot of benefits to trying some of these strategies. It's just putting them all together. And so, another thing people have talked about is dry land farming, and that's what my friend was talking about, is how shaping the land such that I have a slight slope that it could, the rain would run into like very small terraces, you might say, because I don't have a very steep drop, but there's just a subtle grades and subtle terraces that would catch water, and then you would plant, where the water pools, you plant your corn or your wheat, you know, or whatever you're growing, and they talk about how they are trying to grow corn down here without any, watering, and it's called dry land farming. I think it should be called something different, but anyways, so these are things that people are experimenting with. How do you do this? How do you put all this together, though? And then there's all this other stuff that you can use to help build the soil and condition the soil. And, you know, there's biodynamic farming, Rudolf Steiner, which really works a lot with the subtle energies, which is very important for the plants in the land, to help the plants have a supportive environment. Effective microorganisms, EM, which you put these in the ground and they really help break down the humus and matter on the top of the soil to supply nutrients. So when you use these microorganisms, you don't have to fertilize after a certain point anymore, because it'll automatically fertilize. There's Google culture builds it, build these, Google gales, I think is how you say it. They build these mounds and put plant life in them and the mulch and stuff on top. And these also supply fertilizer, and you don't have to fertilize them, and they actually can hold a lot of water, so you don't have to water them. So all of these things that you could do, you know, sonic blooms, another thing where you're sending out, you play bird sounds and you play maybe some nice music, whistling, and people used to sing and whistle and hum to their plants, talk to their plants, and this helped them take in nutrients and grow and open the stomata on the plant. So you, the sonic bloom, you spray this nutrients on the leaves, and then you play this music, and it helps them grow, and I've been experimenting with that. And there's other things too, these towers of power, which are towers these monks built, I think in maybe it was Scotland or somewhere like that, and these actually bring some kind of cosmic energy and support plant life, and they always could build farms around these things. There's pyramids, also did the same thing, how balanced the energies before elements and made the weather more mild and beneficial to the people and the plants, and so they would always build farms. There's another thing called cosmic culture, which are these tubes that somehow bring subtle energy to the earth. So there's a lot of different techniques out there for farming. And again, it's like, what do you do? You know, and people say start small and observe nature. Commune with the plants and the animals and the landscape data, you know. And maybe you can volunteer with a local farm or conservation group to learn how to practically implement some of these ideas. So I did. And I learned a few things, and that's helped me start to come up with some kind of plan. You know, but it's still bothering me. Well, how do I do it? And then I was reminded of the painting that I've been doing lately, and I do kind of modern art, mostly pattern type work. And sometimes landscapes, and I very detailed often. And I've been experimenting with the energy waves from the Vastu Mandala grid, so I have a grid on my paintings, and I build the grid in, and I sometimes work with it on a broad area, filling stuff in, and sometimes I'm very detailed. But it comes together, you know, sometimes it takes months to do a painting, but it comes together. And I was thinking about that, and I got the inspiration that my yard is like a big painting, it's a big canvas, and I can have a rough sketch, and I can start filling it in here and there, and I'll get inspired to do different things, and that's how I should approach it. And this can be, you know, I have 30 years to complete it. I don't have to do it next week, which is sometimes you feel a burden of trying to get this something done so quickly. But it can be, and it will be my statement, one of my statements to the universe, the beauty that I create on this land when I'm done. And I just wanted to encourage you all to consider that, you know, wherever you are, you can do stuff. You can build, and you can grow plants, and you can do sonic bloom in your house if that's all you have, or if you have just a small yard. You know, my friend Claire has a condo and a small yard, and she's planting plants in that yard and flowers and things, and it gives her a lot of joy. And I know, you know, these people in LA who have built they have like 0.2 acres or something like that, and they live right next to a highway interchange, you know. But they have like 0.2 acres, but they have animals and chickens and all kinds of things going in their yard and in their house. And I think they produce like 6,000 tons of vegetables. It's absolutely amazing. They feed themselves, plus they can sell some in a very small space in a city. And what environment have they created? They've created this little oasis for bugs, for bees, for birds, for all kinds of little critters to be in the city. And so there's so many wonderful things going on. There's this guy in LA who was into how can he beautify the cities, how can they make them better. And he'd done a number of things, like he tried, you know, he started the recycling program in Los Angeles. Well, he started learning about water harvesting, and he found out how much money the city was spending on trying to keep the water from flooding and causing damage in the city. It was like $200 billion or something like that. It was some ridiculous amount on very, very structures. Or maybe it's not $200 billion, but it was billions of dollars anyways. He was spending, and so he was trying to tell him, well, you know, you could do all this water harvesting. You don't have to do this. You don't have to spend all this money. If you had people water harvesting, and he went so far as to develop a in a tank that city officials and mechanisms, the city officials could collect water off of houses and then control this water and bring it back into the watering lawns and even using it if they wanted to for drinking and stuff like that. He built all this. And he tried to convince them, and he couldn't convince them to pay attention. So he decided, well, he's going to build a example house. So they built this house with all these water harvesting structures, or they took an existing house and they put all these water harvesting structures on it, you know, gutters and rains and French drains and stuff like that. And then they planted it. And then when they got it to the right point, they brought the city officials over and they poured, I think in 10 minutes, they said they poured like 4,000 gallons of water on top of the house and the yard. And they said that that city officials were absolutely amazed because none of the water went onto the street. It all stayed on the property and the house. And they immediately saw how they could, you know, save so much money, create jobs by transforming, you know, LA into this the cityscape where those water harvesting structures and, you know, the plant diversity, he calls it this, what is it, a city forest, creating a city forest, putting more plants in there, how this would help solve so many problems because, you know, our cities are just all this hard pavement. So, and they just direct water into the creek bed. So they started a big program and are doing the big programming and now starting to encourage people to put in water harvesting structures and tanks and things like that and to lessen the flooding problems and to create a greener landscape in LA. So there's a lot of great projects going on all around. And so I encourage you guys to do that too. Thank you for joining me today. Have a great day.